You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Mike McNamara for Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. And hopefully wherever you are, having a good day so far. It's early, I know. The Colleen and I went hiking yesterday. So I said, hey, let's go hiking. So she just looked at me like, really? And I said, yeah, let's go hiking. So we went on a hike, and there's some beautiful hikes here on the California coast. Because it goes, when you get down towards Laguna Beach, probably just a little bit south of Corona Del Mar. So if you're Orange County savvy, which you may or may not be, it goes kind of Newport Beach and where the airport is, a little bit inland from that. And then as you go south, it's Corona Del Mar, a little bit further south. And then Laguna Niguel and stuff like that. But, and then still further to the south is Laguna Beach. So about, I don't know, a little bit south of Corona Del Mar by a few miles are just some incredible hikes. And there's one called El Morro Canyon, and it goes from, you know, just off the Highway 1 to mountains and then back down again if you hike east, right, inland. And so Colleen and I did that. Now, I thought it'd be like a 5-mile hike. It wound up being an 8-mile hike. And I don't know how many feet it goes up, but it's a pretty good hike. So needless to say, at the end of the hike, she's looking at me like, really? We really had to do this. But we had a good time. And then we had to go feed her. Now, Colleen is famous for like not eating her food. Yeah, that's what she, yeah, that's what Colleen's famous for. So she so we sit down at Chick-fil-A, her favorite, and we're, you know, talking and eating, and then I swear I'm eating, and I look up a few minutes later, and like her sandwich is gone. And I look at her. And I looked over and I said, are you kidding me? And she started laughing. And she said, I never eat all of this. I am so hungry. And I said, evidently, like, wow. And she said, I know. She said, I know, Dad. Amazing. And so, anyway, so we went hiking yesterday. And, you know, but absolutely beautiful down there. So I don't know if I'll make it a habit. I'd like to. It's about a 15, 20-minute drive down there and back. But I think it's good for you, like for me anyway, right? Get up at 5:36, depending on how well I sleep, and then come in here and get ready to do the show, and then do the show. So by about noon, right, that's already six to seven-hour day, depending on when I got going. And so to me, to take a break from noon till 3, right, get out in the fresh air and the sun and go do something, probably not a bad idea. So, but we'll see. We'll see. Life has a way of complicating stuff like that. Today on the show, Andy Milburn's going to join us. Colonel type, United States Marine Corps, former commanding officer of Marine Special Operations Command, so MARSOC. Yeah, Andy. And went through IOC when me and my friends were there. I don't know if I was there when Andy went through. I think it was my friends were there. But I'm not sure. I can't remember. And so Andy will join us. Now, he's actually in Somalia at this time. So we recorded the interview Sunday. And so you'll hear that interview today. And it's a... You know, I wanted to get him on to talk about the Suleiman hit. And so we eventually get to that. But Andy, you know, has some observations about security for advisor teams, which is something that we talk about on this program a lot. And the responsibility for higher commands to make sure that you can get to the people that you're going to put in harm's way. And you can get to them with some kind of aviation support ordnance type, like shooters. And you can also medevac them in time. And so, and that's not easy. That's not easy when you're out there on the frontier in a place like Somalia. How do you do that? Where does it come from? Right? Where does the hub have to be? What's got to be up if guys are going out? Now, the alternative to that is, I hate to use the word hunkering down, but let's use that for lack of a better term. Hunkering down in a firm base. What does that mean? That means you don't leave the firm base. So we're going to increase our security, which is not what you're doing. You're not increasing your security. You're going to limit your vulnerability by not venturing out. Okay. But know that those are different things. Right? You can attempt to decrease your vulnerability by not going out, but when you don't go out, right, when you're not out there kind of looking, mentoring, helping, then things begin to encroach and you're looking for other people to that may not have the tactical experience to notice that stuff and to see the implications of it. So, yeah. So Andy and I have a conversation about that, and you're going to hear his thoughts about that. So it's an interesting article. It's an interesting interview, and then later on in the interview, we talk about the Suleiman hit and get Andy's thoughts about that. So you'll hear Andy Milburn today. Andy, always an interesting guest. When he joins us here on All Marine Radio. So looking forward to that. And, be an interesting program today. The other thing I saw in the news that it's like, I saw it and I'm like, is that true? Is Prince Harry, did he actually audition for, to do voiceovers? For Disney? Now, I don't know what's going on. And I like that dude, right? I read that he's an honorary lieutenant general in the Royal Marines. right? Does he have to give that up too? If he's not, I mean, the whole basis of it is not. Yeah, I mean, I think he got out as a captain, maybe a major, but if he's not His Royal Highness, does he still get to do that? So, you know, and then I was reading a story, and it says that he was he was reading voiceover audition for Disney. And I was like, what? And so I kind of looked it up. Right? I kind of looked it up. So it is a whole series of our stories about headlines. Prince Harry didn't just pinch Disney on Meghan's voiceover talent. Right? Headline: Meghan Markle, Prince Harry pitch voiceover work to director Jon Favreau in a video. And that's according, let's see, that's on Fox News. But that's one of many stories. Like, what? So you're going to go do voiceover work? And then how does that get into the public eye? A week after a video of Prince Harry talking with Disney CEO Bob Iger surfaced, a new video has been unearthed showing the royal and his wife, Meghan Markle, speaking with director Jon Favreau about voiceover work. In the video, Harry and Markle were seen talking to Favreau, 53, a frequent Disney collaborator, pitching voiceover work. Next time anyone needs any voiceover work, we can make ourselves available, Harry said in the video obtained by the Daily Mail. Anything like that, the prince said to the Lion King director, not just Scar. That's a no to Scar. In the video, Markle also joked, saying, that's really why we're here to pitch, with a laugh. And then he says to Iger, who's Disney CEO guy, right? You know she does voiceovers. Oh, really? I didn't know that, Iger said. She's really interested, said Harry. We'd love to try, Iger responded. So that's what's going to happen. We're going to sit here like the former prince, right? I'm like, okay, Harry, look, are you being led around by the nose a little bit? Like, what are you doing? Has anybody had that conversation with that kid? Right? And Prince Charles does not seem to be like the best father to me in the world. Okay? Now, I don't know the ins and outs of everything that's going on in that family, but yeah, Prince Charles, to me, not so much. Not so much. He's just seems like a doofus to me. Maybe I'm just being too harsh as a and for those of you who don't know, I'm not an insider when it comes to the royal family. But this is like, I like Harry, man. He does great stuff with the whole Wounded Warrior community. He does great isn't the right word. He does fantastic stuff relative to the Invictus Games and all the things he's done, you know, lending his support, his name, his notoriety, and most of all, his compassion and his kind words to, you know, the plight of those wounded in combat, right? And then he'll go, you know, wherever they are, whether it's the Olympics or what have you, and he lends his support to that. And it's wonderful. And so now he meets this good-looking girl. Now they've had a kid. They had the big wedding. And now they're like, hey, I'm out. Yeah, I don't know that I like that, you know? I got to tell you, I'm not sure I'm a fan of it, you know? So, like, really? Voiceover work? Now, what is voiceover work, right? You become the voice of Scar, right? You become the voice of Mufasa, which you can't do because I think that's James Earl Jones. Simba! Yeah, that's one dude, man. That's James Earl Jones. So that going on. And so, yeah, I just want to register my concern for Prince Harry. I saw that yesterday, and I was like, yeah. A few people emailed me after my discussion yesterday about the, you know, preliminary data about a year of post-traumatic winning. And, you know, asking essentially, so what now? Well, now, it, you know, the trick is to take that small data sample, right? Small data sample, but trending in the right direction, right? Make sure you categorize it honestly and appropriately, because there will people that will be say, look, it's small and it's inconsequential. And I would disagree with that. I accept that it's small. I accept that it's short. Okay. But let me tell you, when everybody else's numbers are going up and somebody else's numbers are going down, to me, it's worth investigating. So, so you gotta take that data, you know, and again, I've got to, you know, it's not finalized by any stretch. I've got to do a Freedom of Information Act request, got to get the final data, and then, which will move probably slightly, I'm sure, a little bit or not. And then take that and then begin to socialize it. And, hopefully things will be written about it and interest will be created around the country for what is this thing. And so really that's what's next. And so it's interesting, and we'll see what happens after that. So, so that's what's next. And then, but it, again, always more of the same, always going out and, you know, preaching the gospel of post-traumatic winning. But, hopefully down the road, you know, when, you know, this thing gets a broader base, and other people that are interested, and they see the validity of the program and the fact that it does deliver results, then at some point, I do believe that you're going to see corporations come and say, "Hey, we'd like to attach our name to this," and then it'll grow. And grow and grow and grow. And so that's, but so precisely where this is the story's got to be told to a wider audience, which would mean, right, newspaper articles and website covering and, you know, academics looking at it. And again, I fully expect that some will dismiss it. But again, given normally the bad news that comes out of different programs, when something positive happens, right, I think that, you know, it's worthy of a look. And so that's what I hope happens with post-traumatic winning. So to the three people that emailed in to me yesterday and said, so what now? That's essentially what now. So with that said, right, the United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. Good morning. This is dedicated to my daughter, Colleen, yeah, who hung in there on an 8-mile hike yesterday. So well done, Colleen. Nice going. See? You say, Dad, I can't do that? Right.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
When the danger is perceptible and the cost of acting are low, the failure to act guarantees that the threat will grow and the ultimate cost will be higher. Every day that goes by makes North Korea a more dangerous country. You don't like their behavior today? What do you think it'll be when they have nuclear weapons that can be delivered to American cities? Do you want to wait till then to act, or do you want to act now?
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right. We'll do the weather that wins. Currently in the nation's capital, or just south of it, in Quantico, it's cold, 37 degrees. Okay, now, whenever I see temperatures like that, which are not out of the question because that cold air that was in Saskatchewan had to go someplace, right? Currently sunny and 31 in Quantico. Mostly sunny and 37 at Camp Lejeune. Yikes. 29 Palms is warm, dried up. Partly sunny and 51. Pendleton, cloudy and 52. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark, clear and 64. Okinawa, unseasonably cool, I think. Clear, dark and 59. In Afghanistan, it is dark, cloudy, and 44, so Afghanistan stays cold. And in Iraq, in the Al-Anbar province, it is dark, cloudy, and 52. At the home of All Marine Radio, cloudy and 57, looking for a high of 64 today, 66 tomorrow, and then on Thursday, all the way up to 72. Yeah! How about that? Yeah. So, good stuff. I think Chris Cox moved to Hawaii. He's like still there. It's like, dude, it's a vacation, okay? You didn't immigrate. From him, shithole weather continues to pivot to the Pacific. Dude, go back to Massachusetts where you belong. Position, Wailea, Maui, Hawaii. Below in the picture is a red-crested cardinal seen commonly here. Current conditions, dark, 65 degrees Fahrenheit, looking for a high of 81 today. Sunny, clear skies expected, winds out of the north at 6 to 10, turning light and variable, another lovely day to be in Maui. Chris from Webster out. And then there, lo and behold, is a picture of the cardinal. From East Grand Forks, Minnesota, what was colder than a well digger's ass last week. Currently, at 8 a.m. Central Standard Time, it is 1 degree above zero. Feels like 28 degrees below zero. It's cloudy, visibility at 5 miles an hour. Winds out of the south at 22, gusting to 31. The high for today is going to be 22. Low tonight is going to be 16 degrees above zero. Yippee, we won't be below zero. No snow in the forecast today. Have an awesome day. Yeah, won't be as good as you guys, though. And now, just know this, that Ruthann in East Grand Forks, Minnesota, is south and east of Bev in Saskatchewan. So normally, Bev is colder than Ruthann. January 21, Churchbridge weather. Good morning and happy Tuesday, Mac. The pleasant weather continues in Churchbridge in east central Saskatchewan. Currently, it's overcast. Winds out of the south at 9. Feels like 18 degrees, right, above zero. No, the air temperature is 18 degrees above. The wind chill is at 5 above, which is, I mean, they were like wind chills of what, 30 and 40 below last week. This afternoon will be the perfect temperature for making snowmen and chucking snowballs. A mix of clouds and sun, winds out of the west at 9, and a high of 32 degrees that feels like 25.
Yep. How about that?
Now to North Carolina we go, the first Ardent. 27 degrees in Chile. Sunny today with a high of 40. Winds out of the southwest at 7, an overnight low of 22. Wayne from Hickory, North Carolina. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. A quote from Theodore Roosevelt. And he's got a platform. He must have gone hiking. Because it's a platform that overlooks, I don't know, it looks like a view looking east from Hickory into the Blue Ridge Mountains. So rolling hills, right? A lot of green trees, a lot of trees with no leaves on them. And it looks like the Blue Ridge Mountains in the background. So that's my take on that. We'll take a quick break. We'll check weather after this. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hundreds of thousands of veterans have taken off their uniforms and put them away, carefully packed and safely stowed. But for some veterans, the uniform isn't so easily removed. The emotions experienced while serving continue to weigh on them. Life after service is different. Many veterans find transitioning difficult, and daily life is no longer as enjoyable as it once was. Some feel overwhelmed and lost. But that uncertainty doesn't take away from their strength and courage, nor does it take away from the sense of duty veterans carry with them. The transition from service is different for everyone. If you are a veteran going through a difficult time, or know one who is, the power of one person, one connection, one act of compassion can make a difference. For free 24/7 confidential support, call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Or visit veteranscrisisline.net.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs at allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Tuesday, Peyton Davis. Hey, I will tell you something. If you did not listen yesterday because you were off or whatever, I would tell you, by all means, go to the website and tee up for yourself Dr. King's speeches that I played yesterday. I'll tell you that every time I listen to him, I mean, I'm awestruck by his speech making ability. I looked at a website yesterday, you know, Greatest American Speeches. He wasn't even listed on it, which I think is bullshit, right? And so, in fact, I'm trying to think, you know, great speech makers in world history. Well, do you know dialogues from the year, 15 BC, Now, maybe academically they've resonated through time, but I mean, how important could they have been in an era when there wasn't mass communications, when the people that heard them were confined to a very small group? So anyway, I'm a little bit biased towards, things in our modern world. So when I see, Aristophanes, soliloquy to the Greek, whatever. I don't even know who Aristophanes was, but anyway. When I see that as one of the world's great speeches, I'm like, all right, dude, whatever. And so if you haven't heard that, this is from the website, American Historic. .com. top 100 speeches in the 20th century. Here's another one from, here's the top 10, top 100 speeches of the 20th century, University of Wisconsin. I'm trying to find something from a credible news source. Here's one from Forbes, the greatest American speeches ever from Forbes. All right, so let's look at that, and then we'll look at the other one. Greatest American speeches ever. Number one. This is the criteria which I think is important. One, the speech has to be of the moment, but also transcendent. Okay, Lincoln's brief elegy to the fallen. Shouldn't that be eulogy? E-U? There's no U in that word, so I don't know. Elegy. I know that because I've seen it used other places. So let me educate myself here about the word elegy. Elegy, a poem of serious reflection, typically a lament for the dead. I don't think that's what the Gettysburg Address was, but whatever. Lincoln's brief elegy to the fallen of Gettysburg nonetheless managed to look back at the founding of America and ahead to its future. What does it take to be able to look beyond current problems and concerns and foretell the course of future event? So, the language has to sing, simply. Kennedy's inaugural address, with its balanced, elegant negations, asks not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country, has been analyzed many times, and speechwriter Ted Sorensen, who I interviewed, right, role has been thoroughly discussed. So, number three, the speech has to address some real and pressing need. Aristotle talked about three kinds of speeches, informative, persuasive, and decorative. I've always argued that the only reason to give a speech is to change the world. That means a speech necessarily must be persuasive, almost certainly informative, and at some part, and of course, decorative. All three of Aristotle's categories at once. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech addressed the urgent need of ending segregation in the United States, and his memorable phrasing made it impossible for Americans to forget his words and continue with Jim Crow as they had for so long. So there's some criteria, right? So with that said, this is AmericanRhetoric.com. Top 100 speeches. American speeches. Number one, Martin Luther King, I Have a Dream. Number two, John Fitzgerald Kennedy's inaugural address. We should listen to that. Number three, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, his first inaugural address. We should listen to that. Number four, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Pearl Harbor Address to the Nation. Number five, Barbara Jordan, her keynote address at the 1976 Democratic National Convention. Number six, Richard Milhouse Nixon, his Checkers speech. Number seven, Malcolm X, the ballot or the bullet. Number eight, Ronald Reagan, his Shuttle Challenger disaster address. Number nine, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, the Houston Ministerial Association. Number 10, Lyndon Baines Johnson, We Shall Overcome. And Dr. King's I've Been to the Mountaintop speech is number 15. So maybe we'll listen to a few of those. I don't know that I've heard John Kennedy's entire speech, his inaugural address. Haven't heard that. If you haven't listened to them, I would just tell you, while you're driving someplace, go ahead and put it on. First of all, it's like music to your ears because of he's such a great speaker. But what I would tell you to that you'll notice in it, in relative to speech making, is this: the vivid way he articulates his vision, right? And I've tried to do this with Post-Traumatic Winning, right? And so I noticed this in speech making. Somebody, right? And in his in Dr. King's speech in Memphis the night before he was murdered, he talks about, right, if the Lord asked him, Martin Luther King, when would you like to walk, right, the earth? And he talks about he would fly over, you know, the building of the Great Pyramids and the land of the pharaohs. He would, you know, he would fly over the Renaissance. And he uses these great, right, vivid visual images of where he, you know, would like to be. And I just find in his I Have a Dream speech, right, I mean, you know, just gushes with that stuff, right? Just gushes with that stuff. And again, his gift, though, was that he made ordinary people, like he talks about, right, just the check of freedom was being returned to the Bank of the United States for insufficient funds, right? Which is, I mean, something that everybody understands, right? So, I mean, his gift, obviously, a gift that of, you know, great oratory skills using very common phrases, but very powerful images. So anyway, so we might, that just gave me an idea. All right. Some time to do news here on a Tuesday, and then we'll go ahead and we will, wait a minute. A couple late additions to, yeah, people get into their shithole weather in late. Hi, Mac. It's 21 degrees in Pleasantville in western Pennsylvania with light winds. 2 to 4 inches of snow on the ground. Same amount of snow in shaded areas. And it's a dark day with clouds in Pleasantville, Pennsylvania. From Vacaville. Good morning, Mac. Today's weather in beautiful Vacaville, with a picture of outside the front of David's house, I assume. It's currently 47 degrees, rainy, winds out of the south-southeast at 7 to 13. Looking for a high of only 52 in Northern California today. So a couple of late entries in the shithole weather category. So, all right, to the news we go. Stars and Stripes. Top story is, while social media jokes about uniforms and logos, which, let me tell you, and I'm right in there, Space Force is getting ready to fight wars, their senior and staff and CEO says. So yeah, Space Force. Well, and again, I think most people tell you it's necessary for a couple different reasons. One, to safeguard our own stuff in space. Two, to make sure that we're able to counteract and combat the Chinese and the Russians in space. Absolutely necessary. Next story from Stars and Stripes. U.S. airstrike kills 15 civilians in Afghanistan, according to a human rights group. From Kabul, a U.S. drone strike in western Afghanistan earlier this month killed 15 civilians, including 3 women and 3 children, Afghan's Independent Human Rights Commission said in a report released on Tuesday. The incident was a clear violation of human rights. The commission has repeatedly called on domestic and foreign forces to be more careful in conducting military operations so that civilians are not harmed. A spokesman for the United States and NATO forces in Afghanistan confirmed an American aircraft conducted the strike, but said further questions should be directed to the Afghan Defense Ministry. Now, let me decode that. Okay. That means that the Afghan forces, that's the American, right, forces there and NATO saying, yeah, the Afghans, they conducted this. Okay. The strike, which took place on January 8th, killed Mullah Raz Muhammad Nagyali, a regional commander of the Rasul Group, an insurgent faction that split from the mainline Taliban in 2015. The Rasul Group has operated with the tacit support of the Afghan government and has often battled the Taliban in Herat, which is in western Afghanistan. But clashes between the two groups have not been as frequent or as heavy as in previous years, a source within the group has said. U.S. air support was called in by Afghan government forces after an attempt to arrest one of Nagyali's deputies triggered intense fighting with the militants, said Mullah Abdurrahman Nazari, a former spokesman for the group. An official in Herat said the killing may have weakened local support for the government in Kabul. Quote, he, Mullah Nagali, was a Taliban member at one time, but he supported the security forces. So, that in the news today from western Afghanistan, where normally you don't hear much. A joint raid in Syria killed the head of ISIS's oil wing, and that guy financed sleeper cells. The Islamic State group, who oversaw oil and gas operations and helped finance sleeper cells, was killed last week in a joint coalition special operations raid with Syrian partner forces. The ISIS official, known by the pseudonym Abu Awad al-Araki, was killed along with another militant who officials have yet to identify during a raid in the Deir al-Zur province on January 14th. Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces said in a statement on Sunday. His death disrupts and degrades ISIS' ability to finance terrorism activities in the middle Euphrates River Valley along the Iraq-Syrian border, said U.S. Army Colonel Miles Kagans III, a military spokesman for the U.S. coalition in the region. This hit is among the latest takedowns of top ISIS leaders since the killing in late October of the group's leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. But it comes as the future of the coalition's continued presence in Iraq remains uncertain, which some fear could allow the group to resurge. And again, that's why when we talk about understanding the region, right, the Iraqi parliament has to go on record as saying that, hey, we demand the removal of the United States. Now, the leaders of Iraq know that if that happens, they'll have a civil war on their hands. So, again, that's the kabuki dance that you watch. In another headline that, you know, really shouldn't be a headline, because this stuff gets, you know, the operations of United States naval vessels are not, you know, are not changed on a whim. Okay. So freedom of navigation stuff is scheduled well in advance as part of the fleet's operations. But this headline, U.S. sends warship through the Taiwan Straits days after the island reelects its separatist leader. Now, the headline, separatist, like, what is that? What do they want to separate from? Well, they don't. They're an independent nation, right? So, again, headline writers, man, I'm not a fan. The Yokosuka-based guided missile cruiser USS Shiloh sailed through the strait. The strait is about, it's over 100 miles long, wide, right? So it's not, it's like a huge body of water, right? Right. And the Indo-Pacific Command called the transit routine. In response, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Zheng Shuang urged the United States to prudently and properly handle issues relating to Taiwan to avoid harming U.S.-China relations and affecting peace and stability across the Taiwan Straits. Right? China's bullshit. Right? And the more we call bullshit on China, the better off the world is. In a historical note, the next Ford-class carrier is going to be named after a Pearl Harbor hero, and that is a black sailor who was awarded the Navy Cross for his heroism on December 7th, 1941. His name, a lot of you know that if you're familiar with history, is Doris Miller. And he's Doris, his pictures, man, he's a big guy. The fourth Ford-class carrier will be named in honor of a World War II icon, Doris Miller, the first black recipient of the Navy Cross. The naming of CVN, that is carrier, V stands for fixed wing, N for Navy, 81. I was on the 61. And we were only CV because we weren't nuclear. Is expected to be announced during a ceremony Monday in Pearl Harbor by Acting Secretary of the Navy Thomas Mulde. Let's see. Miller was widely recognized as one of the first U.S. heroes of World War II, and his legacy has been a touchstone for African-American sailors in the service. I wonder, did he survive the war? So, during the Japanese attack, he was a mess attendant, right? So he's a messman. Charged onto one of the anti-aircraft batteries of the USS West Virginia, firing at enemy aircraft until running out of ammunition. It wasn't hard. I just pulled the trigger, and she worked fine. I guess I fired her for about 15 minutes. I think I got one of those Jap planes. They were diving pretty close to us. He then assisted the battleship commander and several others off the ship before it sank. For his actions, he was awarded the Navy Cross, presented to him by Fleet Admiral Chester Nimitz on the deck of the carrier USS Enterprise. Miller continued to serve in the Navy until 1943 when he was killed by a Japanese torpedo attack on the escort carrier USS Liscombe Bay. I wondered what happened to him. I'd seen that story before, but never heard the rest of the story. Here's the headline. How AFRICOM plans to counter Russia-Chinese influence in Africa. Now, again, the problem is that the United States says they want out. Right? U.S. Africa Command officials have long cautioned that Russia and China are trying to expand their control in Africa. But the command believes that the U.S. can foil that influence by developing strong relationships with African states and becoming their partner of choice. Now, I agree, but I mean, just last week, you know, or the week before, we said we were diminishing our footprint in Africa. I'm looking to see if in the article. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, told a press news agency on Monday that the U.S. was considering various plans that would redistribute troops in Africa either to the continental United States to enhance readiness or move them to the Pacific region as the U.S. aims to counter aggression from Russia and China. No decisions have been made on the matter, though the Pentagon will ultimately have final say on any of those movements. Milley also stressed it was likely allies would share their input on the matter, comments that come after French President Emmanuel Macron said Monday it would be net bad news for us if the U.S. pulled back from Africa. So it's like speaking out of both sides of our mouths. Africa plans to counter Russian and Chinese influence in Africa, but we are going to draw down our forces there. And essentially, it's our special operation commanders, right, in the region that do a lot with not so much. So you're going to hear Andy Milburn talk about that here in the next hour. Marking the 60th anniversary of the defense treaty, Prime Minister Abe of Japan vows to boost Japan's role in the U.S. alliance. And so there's a picture here, right? Merrill Eisenhower Atwater, the great-grandson of President Dwight Eisenhower, is in the lower left. Mary Jean Eisenhower, Eisenhower's granddaughter, is in the center. And Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, in the lower right, posed for a group photo session as part of the 60th anniversary to commemorate the reception of the signing of the Japan-United States Security Treaty at the Ikura Guest House in Tokyo. And in the background, you got a couple of Marine generals who I don't recognize, and a Navy guy and an Army guy. So we got everybody there. So according to Abe, we have elevated the relationship to one in which each of us, the U.S. and Japan, protects the other, thereby giving further force to the alliance. Going forward, it is incumbent on us to make it even more robust, to make it a pillar for safeguarding peace and security in both outer space and cyberspace. So, let me tell you, I mean, to me, our allies need to do more. I mean, hell, the United States and American taxpayers have been, you know, doing this for a long time, right? And again, you know, we the president says it, and I would absolutely agree with it. There is no reason why Americans should be more concerned with either peace in Europe, Africa, or the Pacific Rim than the people that live in those countries. So, you know, them shouldering a greater burden for their own security, right? Do you want to deal with what you're going to deal with if we're not around? So I think it's, you know, it's only fitting that that stuff happens. So, and again, that they be stronger partners. And again, I would just tell you this. The whole balance of power in Europe would change if Germany was a powerful military nation. The whole balance of power would change if they would devote 2-3% of their GDP to a military that was capable. Right? Top five stories in Early Bird. Then we'll take a break, and then Andy Milburn is going to join us. From Somalia. Yeah, by the wonder of Skype. Top story: Navy's newest aircraft carrier to be named after African American hero. We talked about that. Number two: new regs to restrict firearms and base access and travel for international military students. To me, the screening thing is no small piece of all of this, right? And so if you don't screen them, then how are you going to, if you're not searching cars every day, how are you going to know if they bring a firearm in the trunk? Are you going to search their trunk every day? And then, so to me, the regulations that prohibit it, you know, unless you're going to, how will you implement that? I mean, come on, those are eyewash. So the next time this happens, you can say, well, we did pass those rules, right? International students attending U.S. military training will be able to return to their coursework soon, a Pentagon official told reporters last Friday. As soon as individual commanders hammer out new restrictions and each of the thousands of foreign military trainees acknowledge the new regulations. Quote, getting back to work does not mean getting back to business as usual, Director for Defense Intelligence Gary Reed said in a phone interview last Friday. New security procedures include restricting access to firearm purchases, though officials did not elaborate on how that would be done. So how is that going to be done? Right? As a foreign citizen on the soil of the United States, can you buy a weapon? Trust me, whether you buy it from a gun dealer or you buy it from a private party, you know, there's access. All right, so again, blah, blah, blah. Number two, using the Defense Biometrics Identification System to restrict access to bases or parts of bases unless a trainee has an authorized purpose there. Okay. So I guess it's just we'll change the venue of where the shooting takes place. But if somebody has access, right, they can still get there. Number three, continuous vetting and monitoring of social media and other activity beyond the State Department and Homeland Security Department screenings that initially allow foreign nationals to participate in U.S. military training. Now, that I think that's important, that somebody puts their, you know, their social media accounts into a database that is screened for certain words. And if you see those words, right, then that person is going to ping on somebody's radar as part of monitoring. All right. And then number four, limits on how far trainees can travel off base without prior written approval. Again, they don't tell you. They just do it, right? So to me, only one of the four breaks squelched for me. All right, so that's number two today. Number three, U.S. looks to maintain pressure on Iran as tensions cool. And again, I this is from the Wall Street Journal. And the most interesting development was as Iran crowed that it was now completely outside the JPOA agreement, you had European leaders, right, from the UK and from France say, not so fast, my friend, not so fast. The so again, to me, it's in keeping with, you know, the maximum pressure and also President Trump's message that I'm not going to play the proxy game with you. That if anything happens, right? So you've heard that before. Number four, jury, ex-Guantanamo CO obstructed justice in the death of a civilian worker. Right, the case says that he made false official statements in the wake of a civilian contractor's death on the base. All right. Number five, Space Force offers first peek at its camouflage uniform. And then a series of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 headlines relative to the Iran confrontation. Number one, 11 troops injured after Iran strike against Al-Asad Air Base, says CENTCOM. Okay, number two, ISIS leader Jabba the Hutt captured, taken away in a pickup truck. Yeah, guy's hugely fat, just so that's why they needed the pickup truck. Number three, Iran expands support for the Taliban, targets U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Again, if I was the president, I'd put him on blast. You want to do that stuff? Right? You want to do that stuff? If anything happens there, and I trace any influence, any money, any involvement of Iranian agents, I'm coming for you, right? The next one, this is what the headline says. No bullshit, Trump describes efficiency of Soleimani strike to a Mar-a-Lago crowd. So the president had been taken to task by talking about that in public. And then the final one, Iranian prime minister offers $3 million reward for whoever kills Trump, according to the Iranian news agency. An Iranian lawmaker offered a $3 million reward to anyone who killed U.S. President Donald Trump and said Iran could avoid threats if it had nuclear arms, according to the Iranian news agency on Tuesday, amid Tehran's latest standoff with Washington. So that's a brief look at the news today. We'll take a break when we come back. Andy Milburn's going to join us, so don't touch that dial. All Marine Radio continues on a Tuesday. Next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.